And welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. I'm Paul Dottino. He's David Deal. No, you're not watching MSG's press conference live. We will be doing that program at 2 o'clock Eastern time, so check your local listings for the station and number in your area. But this is Big Blue Kickoff Live, where you have a chance to actually converse and interact with us. Give us a call at 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat if you prefer to get on Twitter and you're just a bit shy to ring the telephone and give us a call. We're going to be here for the next hour to talk Giants football, answer your questions, take your comments and comment ourselves as the Giants get ready for a big game. And yes, it is a big game as they try to get back to 500 against the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday here at MetLife Stadium. David, there's one thing the Giants do know, and that is they are a little bit banged up, the secondary in particular, and they're trying to get these guys as healthy as they possibly can, but they did add a reinforcement yesterday in Cody Sensabaugh, the former Titans and Rams corner, who is going to at least help the depth in the secondary.
And that's going to be a big thing coming into this game, because you know that now with Marty Mordenweg taking over as the offensive coordinator since they fired Mark Trestman, you know that he is going to be more aggressive with his play calling. He's going to try to take more shots downfield and get the rest of these wide receivers, Mike Wallace, Steve Smith, involved, because he understands where to attack. And right now, to attack, the weakness would be the secondary based upon the injuries that are taking place and based upon the fact that we don't know if DRC is going to be able to go. We don't know if Eli Apple is going to be able to go. And we've seen how important those two players are in Steve Spagnuolo's scheme to be able to be more flexible on third downs and cover elite receivers like there are going to be in this game.
Well, I think that's really a good starting point for our program, is the fact that the Giants defense, which, you know what, for the most part has done a good job this year, has been tested now with the injuries to that secondary. They need more pressure on the quarterback to try to help out that situation. And now they're going up against a Ravens team that has changed coordinators. We know Joe Flacco has an arm to get the ball deep when he wants to, but they haven't done as much of that so far this season. So how do you think they will attack the Giants?
I think that's something that we're going to see today, or and we're going to see throughout the week when we're hearing the press conferences of what's taking place. But, I mean, if you really think about it, Joe Flacco now his fifth offensive coordinator in the last five seasons. That is a big adjustment. But having said that, you know that they're going to still be the run-first team, run their West Coast play-action system. I just feel that they're going to be more aggressive with their shots downfield. And in that regard, Joe Flacco, we've seen the ability that he's been able to have. I think the big thing that we'll continue to see is how are they going to try to effectively run the football? Because that's the thing that they want to do. They want to be a run-first team. And Joe Flacco has been hit a lot this season. If you look at his statistics, five touchdowns to four interceptions. They have a lot of injuries. I shouldn't say injuries, but they've got a lot of questions up front with the rookies starting at the offensive line position. So this is a game that's going to be a gut check for the New York Giants on where they stand, because this is exactly the time in week six. You're going to face injuries. You're going to face different types of adversity, and the Giants have their backs up against the wall and know how important it is to win this football game for their team and to get back on track.
Well, you know what's funny about this is that the last two games when the Ravens lost and they're coming off this two-game losing streak, Flacco didn't throw a pick in either one of those games.
No.
How crazy is that?
I know. And you think about this defense. They create a lot of problems matchup-wise. Their front seven in the DMP's 3-4 system are very aggressive. They're very physical. Their interior nose tackles and defensive tackles are 335-pound-plus. And then you have Terrell Suggs and Elmas Duverville on the outside as those pass-rushing threats, with Jernigan, who comes in as that sub-3 technique to get that provided pass rush inside interior. And they're aggressive. They'll get after you with their front four. They'll blitz. If you think about their linebackers, C.J. Mosley is an outstanding linebacker. Him and Zachary Orr, I mean, those two guys can fly. They can run to the football. And I think that C.J. Mosley is one of, if not the best cover linebacker in the NFL when it comes to coverage.
Well, one guy who's not real good covering anybody right now is Sharice Wright, their left cornerback. He has had tremendous difficulties this year. In fact, he's allowed 5 touchdown passes already. And Victor Cruz would be his guy, okay, if they're in a regular offensive set.
Yeah, and that's going to be the big question is how are we or how are the New York Giants going to be able to, I would say, effectively attack the secondary of the Baltimore Ravens? Because you think about this last game, and I know I was one of the people, just like everybody else, wanting to get Odell Beckham his targets, get him his touches, get him his catches. But at the same time, you can't limit the effectiveness of a Victor Cruz and a Sterling Shepard.
Right.
So this game, it's going to be very important that they run the ball somewhat effectively in order to get things going to set up the passing game. Because if they are in third and longs in this game, like in any game, especially without having production on first and second down, it's going to be a long day for Eli Manning in this offense.
All right. So hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter or 201-939-4513, our telephone number. And we should just get to one other point because it is the huge elephant in the room. When you talk about pass protection and the Giants' offensive line, they got to deal with guys like Dumervil and Terrell Suggs. David, the one thing we saw the other day in Green Bay is that even though, you know, Eli Manning did not get sacked a whole ton of times, they were effective in their pressure against him. And you know the Ravens have looked at those films.
No question. And you know that they're going to do exactly what other teams are going to do. They're going to attack. They're going to put too high, play man, and threaten the Giants to run the football effectively and try to work the seams and get their tight ends involved. And that's been an issue up until this point, and that's one of the reasons why the Giants have been on their skid offensively. So you know that they're studying film. They're, unless the Giants correct the mistakes from last week to this week, they're going to attack like sharks smelling blood in the water.
All right, let's get to the phone calls. Jay, you're on line 4. You are first on the program. Hello.
How you guys doing?
Hi.
All right, long-time listener. Really enjoy the show.
Kind Great.
Of keeps me in the state of mind I need to be in, considering we've been losing. So a few things on my mind, and then I had a question for both of you guys to answer that you guys can answer, like, off the air. But I'm going to state my points first.
Okay.
Okay, just a few observations. I just think this team is really missing Tom Coughlin. I didn't really want to harp on this too much. I don't not believe in McAdoo, but I believe he's bitten off a little bit too much. He's still calling the plays. He's trying to run everything. He's never been in this position before. We got an offensive coordinator sitting there not doing nothing. I don't believe his talent. It's not talent. The team's talented. I mean, we went through these three past couple years where there was no talent and solid coaching. Because if you look at those games we're losing last year, we're not losing those games by a lot of points. We're losing those games by 3 points, 2 points. Misplays here, misplays there. Okay, that's last year. But this year, all this talent in-house like this, and we can't make nothing happen? This offense has been progressing for years. They've gotten better every year, but it seems like they've taken a step back, considering that McAdoo has all this on his plate. I just think he's got too much on his plate right now. And what I wanted to ask you guys is, do you guys think that maybe he shouldn't be calling the plays? Because then maybe he can focus in on the little things that go on throughout a football game. Like, there's play. I remember that last week at halftime, we end the half, we got a timeout. Victor Cruz catches a pass on the 18-yard line for the first down, and he doesn't even burn a timeout. We could have had at least 2 plays into the end zone. But I'm saying, he's probably not looking. He probably can't see everything that he needs to see, considering that he's a first-time head coach trying to call the plays. Just how do you guys feel about that?
Well, you know, I'm going to answer, and then I want David to pick it up. Simply put, he is a rookie head coach, and there will be growing pains.
Yeah, of course.
So let's understand that. That's not to be critical of him. That's to understand the situation that he's in, and it is a new ball game. And there's no doubt any rookie at any level in any sport is going to have to learn and going to go through some bumps and bruises. It's going to be, David.
Yes, it most certainly is. I mean, you're going to go through those, and I think every head coach their first time taking over are going to learn on the run because of how many things are different from being a coordinator or being a position coach. But having said that, I know a lot of blame wants to go on Coach McAdoo. He should have done this. He should have done that. But at the same time, as a former player in that locker room, You know, when plays are called in the huddle and they're the right calls and you come up short, that's on you as a player.
Right.
That's on you as a team, and that's on you as a offensive, defense, or special teams. So everybody has their fingerprint on this right now. Everybody is involved in what's taking place, whether it's a bad call by a coach, whether it's a dropped or a mental error, whether it's a penalty by a player. All those things add up and add up, and if you don't correct them, all around you lose the football game as a team. So everybody has their fingerprint on this, and they need to collectively come together, all three phases with the coaches, practice hard this week, get it done, and transfer what they do in practice to the game and put together a consistent and productive four-plus quarter game where the disciplinarian and the discipline of this football team, with the penalties, the extracurriculars, mental errors, all those things are aside, and you need to focus on that play, and that play is the most important play, and continue to do that for four-plus quarters, because that's what it's going to take to win this football game, because the Baltimore Ravens are hungry. They are a wounded animal. They've lost two straight. They feel that they are better than they are right now on paper.
So should the Giants.
And so should the Giants. And of all the records right now since 2008, the Ravens are 20-13 since 2008 up against NFC teams.
Well, a lot of people think they play more like an NFC team because they are physical and you will feel the bruises after the game.
Yeah, so you know this is going to be a tough, hard-fought match like any game is. It's going to be the most physical offensive and defensive line are going to set the standard for this game. And I think if you look for the Giants defense on the other side of the ball with the injuries and with dealing with the secondary right now with the unknowns of who are going to be the starters, this is a time where the front four, Olivier Vernon, JPP, it's one thing to put pressure on a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers and move him out of the pocket. It is another thing to be disruptive, cause sacks, cause fumbles, get those turnovers needed to help the secondary out where you need to right now.
Yeah, the Giants certainly need to do that. The Giants injury report has just been released. They are out of practice right now. And as we go through the list, they're not indicating how much each guy is doing, just that these are the injuries that they are monitoring and they are going to closely look at. You got Apple with a hamstring. We knew that. Burhe and Donnell in concussion protocol.
Yep.
Dwayne Harris with a toe coming out of that game the other day. Jennings with a thumb. Kennard is in concussion protocol. Newhouse with a calf. Pierre Paul with a groin. DRC with a groin. We got Darren Thompson still with that foot in the boot, and Vernon with the wrist, which has bothered him now for several weeks. So that's the list of all the guys that the Giants trainers are looking at as they go through practice. And again, later on today on Giants.com, you'll get the full report as to how much each guy did and, of course, which guys were held out. Concussion guys have to be held out. They can't even do anything.
But, I mean, you look at this injury report, and it's concerning. Because
there's a lot of guys there.
There are a lot of guys on there, and there are a lot of players on here that are going to be key elements to beating the Baltimore Ravens, starting with the two defensive ends, Olivier Vernon and JPP.
And by the way, I thought JPP played extremely well the other night.
And they fought. They hustled. They tried to do everything that they possibly could do. But at the end of the day, when you think about this, four sacks in five games.
It's not enough.
It's not enough. Not to mention, there has to be more interior push inside to collapse the pocket into Joe Flacco's feet to where he will either back up to fall right into the flow of the defensive ends or where he can't step up and deliver the football accurately where that ball sail high like a lot of quarterbacks, and that's where you get the tip picks.
We'll get to the next call, but I want to get a very quick response on this, David. Some fans are suggesting that maybe JPP and Vernon, who have played each more than 90 snaps or 90% of the snaps so far this year, maybe they're getting gassed. Do you buy any of that?
Well, I think in this last game, they were out on the field for a long period of time. And you think about their effectiveness, it comes down to the offense being able to control the clock, control the time of possession, run the football effectively to keep your defense and your defensive line fresh. But at the same time, when it's third down, this is what you're paid for. You're paid to get the other team off of the field and get a punt and give your team field position. So both of them go hand in hand.
All right, let's go to line two. Big Ed, you are in Maryland and next on the program. Hello.
Hey, Paulie, how you doing?
Hi.
Good to hear from you, man.
You
good
too.
Good to hear from you. And that's Mr. Big David Deal. Mr. Deal, thank you so much, man. We love you, man.
I appreciate it, Big Ed. I hope you're doing well in Maryland. How can we help you, my man?
Hey, boss. I know what we need. It's funny that guy, that call, one of call before me said something about Tom Coughlin coming back, and I was like, wow. If everybody's saying the same thing, then that means this must be true. He does need to come by and say something to him. At least say something to Eli, because it starts with him, and then it can trickle down for everybody else. I'm just looking at it and saying, fellas, discipline. We got to get discipline. It's like chaotic. It's like the whole place is chaotic. We got to get discipline. As soon as the discipline come back, to win games. And hopefully stop being injured, because, but that's part of the game. I guess to say this game against the Ravens, try to get out alive, score points, I don't know. Bass, Paul, Dave, anything? I don't know what to say. Offense. Defense is cool. It's offense got the problem. So I'm saying discipline. What do y'all say?
Well, you know, I will say this, Big Ed. Be wary of Devin Hester, because he's returning kickoffs for these guys, and he could tilt the field, and he could make life difficult for you and make it a lot easier for Joe Flacco than it needs to be. So I think the Giants specials have done a pretty good job this year outside of the Redskins game, David. But that could be an X factor in this game. No matter how much discipline you show on offense and defense, if special teams lets Hester get loose, it's a problem.
And that last game up against the Green Bay Packers, that's where Dwayne Harris started making his hay in special teams before hurting his toe. So it's going to be needed to get field position. It's going to be needed to make a dynamic, momentum-changing play on special teams to help this team beat the Baltimore Ravens at home. That is no doubt, no question, because if you watch week in and week out, the teams that play the best, they're blocking a punt, they're getting a return, they're making plays on special teams to help both their offense and the defense in field position and to put points on the board.
Let's go back to the phones and line one, Jeremy in New Jersey. You're next on the show. Hello.
Hey, guys. So, you know, for the third week in a row, the Giants are probably going up against one of the best front sevens in the NFL. And, you know, teams seem to be using a lot of cover two against the pass-friendly offense, you know, to, like disrupt Eli, take away any deep Odell or Cruz threats or anything. So, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but cover two has a major weakness up the middle, right?
Yeah, if you can work tight ends well down the seams or crossing routes where you're getting mismatches of tight ends against linebackers, correct?
Yeah, we're inside targets, you know, where, like, Will Tye, Sterling Shepard could thrive. Do you agree that getting those two guys involved, getting Eli some completions, is the way to move this offense along and, you know, open up the running game outside targets?
No question. Think about how big of a play that Will Tye catch down the seam would have been for them to open up things offensively. And like I said, this last game, which you need to get Odell your targets, you need to get him the ball as much as you can. But at the same time, when you think about only two targets to Sterling Shepard and Victor Cruz, they came into this last game as the top receiving trio in the NFL.
Right.
And they have to play in sync in order for this offense to function.
Yeah, because I feel like when Eli starts to complete the ball, like regardless of where it is on the field, he starts to get into a rhythm and he can get to his outside receivers, you know, even if there's pressure.
Yeah, like, and this is going to be a good one because, like I said, C.J. Mosley has three interceptions on the year, and he is one of the best cover linebackers. So it's going to be a challenge in this football game because usually that's the mismatch that you're looking for.
All right, Jeremy, thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. 201-939-4513 is our phone number. If we go to line three, it looks like it's Narod from Louisiana.
Yes.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing good. How y'all doing?
We're wonderful. Thanks for calling.
Yes. My point is, I think the problem is Eli. He's not hitting his target like he should. He's trying to hurry up and throw the ball, and he's not taking his time looking around. So I think Eli is the problem there. They need to try the guy behind Eli, or I just think it's time and New York is over with.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm going to play devil's advocate for just one second. Are you blaming Eli for the drop passes? Are you blaming Eli for the passes that have been knocked out of Giants receivers' hands? And by the way, there have been far too many of those.
Yep.
Are you blaming Eli for all of the penalties they've been called on during the course of this three-game losing streak? Are you blaming Eli for the injuries that have ravaged the secondary over the last 2 weeks? Are you blaming him for all of that, too?
No.
I'm just checking.
It's more than him, but like you see, I mean, I think he just ain't on his target.
Well, I think it's fair to say he has not played his best this month. He's been kind of mediocre, but that's not to say it's his fault.
Like I said, everybody has their fingerprint on it, whether it's drops, which the Giants receivers have had in key times in football games, whether it's pressure, getting hit, sacked, people at his feet so that he can't step up and throw the football. I mean, there's a lot of things into it. But, I mean, having said all of those things, this wouldn't be the first time that Eli in his career has been under fire and under criticism. And if there's anybody that can get through it, that can turn things around, that fights through adversity, that all of a sudden turns the pages and everybody's like, that's the Eli I know, it's this quarterback. So everybody has their fingerprint on it. I understand, just like everybody else, he needs to play better, but everybody else around him has to play better as well.
Thanks for the phone call. By the way, Phil Simms went through similar situations when he was winning for this team as well. And you know what? If you watched the game the other night, and David, feel free to disagree if you want to. I'm perfectly fine with that. But how many quarterbacks in this league make that throw to Odell Beckham in the back of the end zone at the end of the game? That was a hard throw to make.
A
hell of a catch.
A hell of a catch, hard throw to make, hit it
right
at the
pylon. How many guys can throw that?
Not many. And then you think about the other throws that he missed because of feeling happy feet, trying to get rid of the football too quickly. And everything has to be in sync for this group in order to move forward and to correct the mistakes that they've made these last weeks, because the drops, the mental errors, the penalties have put them where they are in this position. The only ones that can fix it are the people in that locker room and in the huddle.
All right. Sean from California, you're on line 4 next on the show. Hello.
How you guys doing this morning?
Hey,
good
Sean.
To see you. Or talk to you. Whatever.
listening to all these callers, it kind of made me change my question and my point I wanted to make this morning. I want to let fans know I was digging up some records, and you know we're not losing against shitty teams. We're losing against pretty legit teams. If you look at the Redskins, they lost against the Steelers and the Cowboys. Both the Steelers and the Cowboys are 4-1. You look at the Vikings, they're 5-0. You look at Green Bay, they're 3-1. So we're really, you know, I think yesterday was the turning point. I think Sunday was the turning point for us, being that we couldn't even get a turnover and we got 3 in one game. I thought the Cards was going to be, you know, pretty good about that. I mean, like, we got 3 turnovers in one game, and we can't totally change. Everybody wants us to play good. All the fans, including myself and you guys, we want the Giants to succeed. But you can't change everything in one week. I think
that is true.
Last week was a good week for us because, hey, look, we finally got our turnovers. And now we're going to Baltimore at home. We got the Rams. I'm sorry, guys. My boss needs me. I have to cut it short. Thank you.
That's okay. Wow. I appreciate his willingness to call us from work.
I mean, realistically, Janoris Jenkins, 2 interceptions obviously were huge. It turned the corner where there were no takeaways going into the football
game.
But they only got one field goal. They only got 3 points out of it. Not to mention, you think about it, there were 2 others that should have been intercepted or could have been intercepted.
Yeah.
And it didn't change the outcome.
Adams had a shot at one. It was so easy.
But it didn't effectively change the outcome of the football game because they only got 3 points out of it. Yeah. That's the biggest thing. When you're given those golden tickets, that is your opportunity to pile it on and really take momentum into your side and make the other team start second-guessing and start being more conservative and game managers.
One thing for sure, when the guy's talking about the Giants' opponents and who they're playing, look, I don't think anyone's going to confuse this stumbling Ravens team right now with the elite in the league, and no one's going to confuse the Ravens as being one of the elite teams in the league either. So the Giants are in a position with a home game and a game in London to certainly compete, if not win, those two games to get over 500 to go into the bye. And to me, David, that would be a very critical foundation for them to build as they try to move forward.
That's what they have to build, because we all see how tough the stretch is down the road, and we all know how tough it is with the December schedule in the NFL with all the division games at the end. This game's the gut check game. This game is to see what this Giants team, it's not about what they say, it's about what they do and what they do on Sunday in this one.
Yeah, Parcells used to say it's a bring your lunch pail kind
bring
of game.
Without a doubt, bring your lunch pail and your boxing gloves. Get ready to fight.
Rob from New Jersey, you're on line two. Next on the show, hello. Rob, are you there?
This is Len.
Len from Maryland. Okay, we'll take you next. We'll allow you to jump the line. It's okay.
I'd speak up because it sounded like you had clicked in to take my call, but you were calling me Rob. But here I am.
Okay, Len, okay. Go for it.
Well, our 2-week nightmare is over, and we got to go forward and win a game on Sunday. And it's as simple as that. Forget about the last 2 weeks. Just go out and win a game. But Paul, I wanted to comment on a couple of things that you said. One on the difficulty of Eli's throw to Beckham at the end, and I'm wondering if your thinking is along the same lines. I thought it was a difficult throw also, and I'm going to tell you why. And David, maybe you can comment on this too. That pocket on Sunday night got awfully small.
Yeah.
Not just on that play, but oh my gosh. I mean, he was like throwing from inside a water glass. It just got awfully small.
Yeah.
Paul,
yeah.
Is that where you were coming from?
No question. Think about what he had experienced throughout the course of that night. And it was getting worse and worse and worse, and the Giants are trying to climb uphill. And what do you know? Now, again, I was on the field, so I was getting a pretty good player's viewpoint from the field. I don't know what it looked like on TV or what it looked like upstairs in the press box or up in the crowd, but I'm telling you, from being there on the bench, I saw what he was looking at, and I saw what a hard throw that was to make.
Oh, no doubt. Not to mention, you think about how this offense – is predicated on getting rid of the ball fast. He can only do it so fast without the pressure of the pocket. And the biggest thing, like I said, like I was just talking about Joe Flacco and the Giants defense, obviously Olivier Vernon and JPP on the outside fighting to do whatever they can. But you have to get the interior push like the Green Bay Packers did so that you don't have that ability to step up.
Yeah.
The center and the two guards, they're responsible for the depth of the pocket. That's why if you've ever noticed the big guards, the 330-pounders, are the ones in front of Drew Brees, the shorter quarterback, so he can step up and see over the offensive line. And the tackles are responsible for the width of the pocket. If that pocket starts to collapse up the middle, it doesn't matter what happens. If he goes back, he's going right into the defensive end. If he's going forward, he doesn't have the balance and the posture to deliver a football accurately because he cannot stand and deliver it.
Right, man. There you go. It looked to me all night long, not just on that play, that pocket was awfully small. Hey, Paul, I liked your comment about the whenever you play the Ravens, and you know David's been in some games with the Ravens. We don't play them very often, but you've been in games with the Ravens, and it just seems to me, and it's not particularly under Harbaugh, this is just the way it's been in the past with the Ravens. The first thing they try to do is punch you in the nose.
Well, it's a tough blue-collar city, and that's the team
they
built.
They punch you in the nose and see how you react, and if you just fall back and cower, you're gonna get pounded.
The perfect example of that is
AFC North is a tough division. I like what the coach said. I think it was after the Minnesota game. Our coach. I like what he said after the Minnesota game in talking about Odell and the problems that he was having. The emotion and so forth. And he made a comment. This is a man's game. David, you can probably attest to that better than anybody. It's a man's game. And, man, you better be a man out there Sunday against this Ravens team because this is just a physical outfit. Now, new offensive coordinator, but last week, 11 passes to the tight end, 7 passes to the starter, 4 passes to the backup guy. four passes to the running back, three to the fullbacks. Geez, if the fullback kills us again, you know, it's absolutely amazing in the last 2 weeks. Both those teams ran their fullback up the middle on short yardage and were successful. We just, I mean, two just mediocre guys hanging on in the NFL. I mean, nobody knew their name before the game, and in a critical situation, they go to these guys and they pick up 2 yards for a first down. I think in the Minnesota game, that fullback line, who hadn't carried the ball all year long, carried it four times, and we couldn't stop them inside the guards right over the center, David. I just don't get it, and that's a point you have to talk about. Bring your manhood on Sunday.
And that's a legitimate
point. Thank you, Lan.
Because if you look at the difference from the first 2 weeks to the last three, Jonathan Hankins and Snacks played much better in their first two games of the season to start.
My big stat that really kind of just sticks into the side of my ribs a lot of times and it never gets published anywhere is missed tackles.
Yeah.
I mean, dreadful the last 3 weeks.
I was starting off with number one, with Eddie Lacy. You have no business taking Eddie Lacy high. You know that you are not going to tackle him and take him down if you're going high for him. That's one. And then two, it carried on to the wide receivers. Randall Cobb should have been stopped on the third down, but missed tackles. He opens it up. They build momentum again, and they drive down and score. It's like one thing after another. That's where this game is the gut check game, because it's going to come down to fundamentals. It's going to come down to holding on to the football, and it's going to come down to discipline. I mean, that's what this game – not to mention, the last thing, finish. They have to finish plays. They have to finish drives. Yeah. They have to finish in the fourth quarter, and they have to finish when the opportunities arise where they can create and take the momentum and dictate the tempo of the football game, because if not, it's going to be a long day. And a prime example of what the Baltimore Ravens are all about, look at their leader, Steve Smith. He's 37 years old. He's still playing at a high level, and he plays with that toughness and that confidence that it doesn't matter what you do. It's about what I do. And that's what needs to take place on Sunday.
We need to find out his injury status, because he definitely would have an impact on this game one way or another.
Yeah.
He's a guy you got to account for sure. JC and AZ, we're going to hit some Twitter questions here before we get back to the phones. Says, do you see Leon Hall struggling in the slot? I saw him beat a lot against Cobb at the Packers. Well, the Giants played a lot of zone.
A lot of zone.
So I don't necessarily know that I could finger point Leon Hall for that.
No, they had to play a lot of zone because of the injuries, and that's one of the biggest things that we're going to have to see moving forward this week with Eli Apple and DRC. Because of the fact with so many injuries, it doesn't allow you to be as, I would say, complex schematically. You have to get back to the basics so that your players can do their job and that you don't have the complete breakdowns.
And it's not just complexity either. It's the high-risk, low-reward factor, because if you want to make a big play and you want to take that risk and you know your secondary is depleted, that's a real, real scary thing to do.
It really is. And that's you're going to either feast or famine. And it's the same thing with the blitz, and it's the same thing with pressure. You have to pick your poison, and when you don't have your full deck of cards, when you don't have your top starting 11 out there, it takes away from play calling. That's only natural.
Same guy wants to add a second comment, and I'll give it to him. He says, does OV look slow off the line to you? He does to me. Is he healthy? What does he need to get to the quarterback? He's actually one of the leaders in the conference in quarterback hurries and pressures, but unfortunately, the sack numbers aren't there. I quite frankly, David, think he's played extremely well against the run, and I think he is pretty quick off the line, but, you know, I'm not going to deny that hand, which is always taped up, has got to be bothering him some.
Of course, but this is where as a unit, as a cohesive unit, they have to pull it together, because it can't just be on JPP and Olivier Vernon.
No.
Yes, they have to do their job. Yes, they have to get sacks. Yes, they have to get the quarterback off the mark and make him move to a different launch point. That's a given. but it also takes the interior defensive tackles as well.
I am Will Ruiz says, let's not sit here and act like Cody Sensabaugh is the second coming of Deion Sanders. We don't even know he's going to play this week.
No.
So I don't know that anybody is talking him up that way, but we certainly give you your right to an opinion there. Let's see here. We have Ben Gruen says, I don't think the reason they're allowing the pocket to collapse and dropping passes is because McAdoo and his play calling. Look, I guarantee you that Coach McAdoo's calling plays that he thinks are going to work, and he's not counting on the pocket collapsing.
No, but in that regard, they've got to be more consistent running the football, and they've got to stick to running the football. You can't bail out of it. Like I said, when teams are playing too high, they're just asking for you to run the football. So that is something that they need to do, and that's where Rashad Jennings has to come into play in this game if he is back healthy. Because without Rashad Jennings, without Shane Vereen, we've seen the way that it has hurt the Giants' rushing attack.
All right, we have A.J. Marshall says, Sensabaugh has experience playing inside and outside. When he does get in the Giants' lineup, where do you see him fit?
It's a great question. I think it's going to be based upon injury and where the need is going to be. I think they brought him in because of his flexibility of being able to play the slot, being able to play corner. But I think it is all going to be predicated on him, number one, being ready and prepared right now to play, but when he is, what is the injury status going to be, and where is the place of need at that current time?
E, the Chosen One, says, do you feel the Flowers experiment is over and it's time to move him to the right side and put Beattie in the lineup?
I think that's going to be handled within this week, because we will see if there's going to be a suspension or not, and we will see how the offensive line is adjusted accordingly. But we'll see how this plays out, because if it continues the way that it has been, if he continues to struggle, something has to be changed. Something has to be done, because if you can't get it done outside on the edges and your quarterback is worried and getting rid of the ball quickly because he has a lack of confidence, you've got to do something to change that.
All right, last Twitter comment for a while. We have Johnny who says, Giants need to run, 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 play action, and take deep shots this week.
Johnny, you're a genius.
Thanks for the comment, Johnny. Let's go back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. It might help to get to the quarterback, too.
I love the fans.
That's good stuff. Adam from Columbus, you're on line one. Hello.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How you doing?
Excellent, Adam. Great. How are you, buddy?
Doing pretty well. Thank you.
All right, what can we do for you?
I got two comments. One may be a little negative, and then I'd like to end on a positive. And I don't want to beat the dead Eli Manning horse, so to speak, but I live on the north side of Columbus, Ohio, so Cleveland is about a two-hour drive for me. So okay. A bunch of buddies of mine are Browns fans. I went up to the Browns-Patriots game because the Giants didn't play till 8:30. Gave me plenty of time to get home and settle in for the Giants game. And one thought that I had is I am arguably watching the best in the game in terms of quarterbacks play against the worst in the game. Cody Kessler and then ultimately Charlie Whitehurst. And I hate to sound like a downer, but one thing I noticed while I'm watching, you know, Eli in the Green Bay game is it just seems like even some of those Browns quarterbacks made some of the throws that Eli seemed to miss against Green Bay. And then I thought, you know, one seam route to Gary Barnage, the Browns tight end, reminded me a lot of the missed throw to Will Tye, which arguably was a 10-point swing. And it's frustrating because it's like it seems like schematically you're giving them options, you're putting together plays that work. It's just got to be executed. You know, your defense stuffs them on seven consecutive third downs, two takeaways against Aaron Rodgers. It just feels like maybe we let one slip there, and largely attributable to those missed throws.
You know what? I'm going to play devil's advocate here. And, David, again, if I'm wrong, let me know. But my issue here is that folks are getting on Eli when he is still throwing what I consider to be catchable balls. They may not be perfect. They may not be right smack in the middle of the bullseye. But you know what? He's been throwing catchable balls his whole career. And it's up to the guy on the other end of that ball to finish the play and make the play. Burris caught catchable balls. Toomer caught catchable balls. Cruz caught catchable balls, at least for the most part. Will Tye did not catch a catchable ball.
Yeah. But do you want, and I understand your point, but do you want your sixth round or undrafted guy out of Stony Brook to have to make the play, or do you want your $20 million franchise quarterback to put it right where it needs to be?
But in that situation,
which do you expect to step up in that position?
I understand what you're saying, but at this time right now in that play, when Green Bay is playing too high, the best way to beat it is to run the football and get the ball to your tight end. So I understand where you're saying, is he the best guy that you're going to go to? No, but because of the injuries, because of where they are at with the tight end position, that's where he had to go with
was
the
he
football.
Open?
That was where
was
the throw was open. That's where the ball should have gone.
I guess what I'm saying is I hope that Eli is one really to make the great play and not force Ty to have to make the better play. But I understand your point. You're left with what you're given.
Yeah.
Let me shift gears here. One thing that I think is maybe kind of positive is if you look, Philadelphia has had the benefit of playing Chicago and the Browns. The Cowboys have had the benefit of playing Chicago and the Niners. I know Washington has played the Browns. I don't know if they've played Chicago or some other maybe bottom-tier teams. I hate to say the benefit because I know in the NFL there's no such thing as a free win. We've also played Minnesota, who has to play, I believe, all other three teams in the division. So it seems like we have some much more winnable games coming up, and they have maybe some much tougher games coming up, with the exception of the Steelers, who Philly has played. But I think it'll give us an opportunity to get some wins under the belt. Like you said, Baltimore, St. Louis, Chicago, the Browns. You know, those are very winnable games that can start putting some numbers back in the win column, and then if we function well in the division, you know, maybe we climb out and make a late-season run.
Yeah, I don't think that's unrealistic, but it starts with one win.
Yeah.
Sure.
It starts with
absolutely.
One. They got to get back on track against Baltimore to do any of what you're starting to talk about.
Sure. Agreed. Well, hey, thanks for taking the call, guys. Love the show. Always have a good time.
All right, thank you so much. 201-939-4513 is our phone number. Next up is James from Pennsylvania. You're on the show. Hello.
Hey, what's up, Paul? How you doing?
Hi, James. Good to talk to you.
All right. I want to talk about two things here, basically both offense and the defense. I think Eli's situation, everybody getting on Eli, and I kind of had a little, you know, scrutiny with him too. But I think he's starting to see, well, his confidence is gone as far as, like, if the protection going to hold. Because if you you see a couple of passes, like he threw, like, a short pass to, I think, to one of the tight ends or the running back, and you see a guy, like, 15 yards downfield, watching it from TV, coming right across the middle, like he had a pass there. I think he's just getting off a little too quick. Like you say, the feet getting a little jittery, but I think that could be corrected if they give Flowers a little help on that side. But going to the defensive side, and which you stole most of my thunder by saying y'all brought up all the topics I wanted to say about the missed tackles and
that's
like
what we're
that,
here for, right, yeah. David?
that's one of the things that be killing me, especially on that Cavs play. But I wanted to say something about the young guys being there, like at the D backs. You know, our D backs are out, just like Green Bay D backs was out. Now it's kind of hard to run your defense the way you want and blitz like that. But I kind of think if you blitz a little more and put more pressure on them, that you got to get close to them at least. Make them throw the ball in 3 seconds instead of having all day to throw the ball. Because now you went from your D-back. I mean, your D-backs is in the NFL, so they're pretty good. They made it to the NFL. I would rather have them reacting than thinking. If you make the quarterback get that ball out real quick, now they got to react. They don't sit back and think. And the offensive guys don't have that much time to do the double moves or running around and do the curl move. Because they'll go in there and make it a hot route. Now, when they got to get that thing out there real fast, either they're going to drop it or hopefully they're going to make the tackle right there. They don't have to chase a guy for 6 or 7 seconds. I was wondering your opinion on that bit.
David?
Great point. Yeah, you want to be able to pressure. Yeah, you want to be able to get after the quarterback. But it's also a game plan thing. It depends on what week that you're going into. But when you're called upon as a up four, your front four, to be able to get after it without blitzing, they've got to get home. They've got to get pressure because the defensive backs are relying on you to cause the pressure for them to get back in coverage. And the same thing goes with the blitz. If you blitz, you've got to get home because the minute, that split second that you hesitate or you stop, a quarterback can pick it up and make a big game-changing play on that behalf. I just think a lot of it is dealing with the injuries that they have on the defensive side of the ball, not being so aggressive because of the fact of having your star players hurt.
Okay. Thanks for the
yeah,
call.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, real quick.
I understand the point you was making, but it's like they were doing that with the front four. When you see your front four can't get there, they're not getting there at
right.
all. You can't run that all game. Although the defense played good, they got them off the field. They stopped them for a few third downs. But not only, I think, well, the ones that if you get that in there and stop letting them do, like, you know, them 8-minute drives and all that there. For one, our defense are getting tired. You know, JPP and all of them getting tired. And for two, our offense, although as bad as they play, they're not getting enough possessions to get it going. You know, you want to give them a few more possessions to get it going. But when you sit there the whole, it just looked like they played a vanilla defense through the whole time. And I understand the injuries, but like you said earlier, Dale, there's the risk of reward.
Yeah.
You got to take the risk sometime to try to get that reward, because if you just sit back the whole game, they're going to chill us and just run around all day.
All right. Thank you so much for the call.
Good talking to you, Dale. Great seeing you.
All right. I appreciate the call. And please do call back another show. Briefly, let's just make something clear. Despite the fact that the Giants' pass rush needs to be better, and there's nobody who's going to deny that, Aaron Rodgers is a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback who is very good at extending plays. Now, that doesn't mean you're excusing any six-second pass play, because that, of course, makes any coach nauseous.
Of course.
But he is so good at extending plays and did a masterful job the other night.
He really did. He extended plays. He didn't have to scramble. He used his feet and his mobility to keep things downfield. And we all saw the clock that he had. When he has that time, you're giving that to an MVP quarterback. So he's going to be able to pick you apart and make things happen. That's where this week it's going to be paramount that the front four and this defense get pressure on Joe Flacco and cause him to throw erratic throws. And more than anything, stop the run. Joe Flacco right now has the second most dropbacks in the NFL because of their inability to start the season with running the football, and that's where they really struggled.
He's thrown the ball an average of 43 times a game, which is number one in terms of attempts in the league. Although the last 2 weeks, I'm forgetting his name offhand, their lead back has run for over 100 yards and then 90 yards last week. Terrence West.
Yeah, he had
he's run the ball very well.
And he had a very good game 2 weeks ago as well, breaking that 100-yard hump against the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, he did. All right, Chris, you're next on the show. Hello. Chris, you're on line 4 from California.
Yeah, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Great. Thank you.
Welcome, Chris.
Hey, guys, I just want to talk about the depth, and I know it's, you know, no secret, but, you know, I mean, how many draft picks do we have on this team, you know, in the last 5 years? I feel like, you know, healthy, this team can beat anyone. You could see that in the first couple of games. But, you know, I knew we were a couple of injuries away from a 6-10 season again. You know, and it's the reason why the Patriots are so good, they're playing money ball over there. And I know, you know, Reese had to do what he had to do and get some, you know, some high caliber talent in there, first team. But, you know, we're missing that 3-year development where those players should be getting into place.
That's a fair comment. And to understand something, the Giants tried to do whatever they could during this offseason to plug as many holes as they had. I thought they did a very good job in terms of plugging most of those holes. But as you know, it's going to take a couple of years to fully fill out the tree. There are only so many apples that you can get off of one tree. And so the depth issue was going to be there. We knew that from the beginning of training camp, that if this team suffered a rash of injuries, they weren't going to be deep enough to hold the fort. That was a given.
Right.
And so, but here's the problem. Again, in one season, you can't fix everything.
Yeah.
So you just have to say, hey, hopefully they're still healthy, because the starting 22 should be pretty good.
Not to mention you think about the physicality of the offense, setting the tempo, being able to dictate the outcome of games and wearing down defenses into the fourth quarter, you know, one of the things that they were leaning on was having a Will Johnson, who they brought in to be the blocking tight end, to
have
Nikita Whitlock, a downhill, smash-mouth football player, to set things up. So those injuries have plagued this team. And then you put Larry Donnell and Will Ty and Adams as your blocking tight ends. That's a difficult issue and a difficult task to overcome.
Guys, can I make one comment on offense and one on defense?
Go ahead.
I don't think people are looking at Eli and saying, what's the problem? I got to believe that hit he took on Washington really affected him. I mean, I can't believe he bounced up from that. He's as tough as it comes. But
he's taken a few of those this year.
That Baker hit's one of the hardest I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah.
It seems like Eli was affected from that point on. He's got a little bit of happy feet in there. He doesn't trust fully his offensive line. I mean, those guys got to do a better job of keeping him upright, you know. And on defense, you know, I love the JPP and Vernon. You watch these guys, and I feel like they're not beating their one-on-ones. If there's something about, you know, and then the rotation doesn't seem to be working. But if you watch Vernon and JPP, solid, great players, good against the run, but when it's a pass and you're pinning your ears back, they can't beat their one-on-ones. And I don't know if that's, you know, JPP seems to be healthy, and I know Vernon has the wrist, but it seems like that's been Vernon's MO his whole time, is he can get pressure but doesn't always finish, doesn't get there.
See, it's interesting. I don't know if it's fair to say they can't beat their one-on-ones, because both of those guys are actually among the leaders in the league in pressures.
Yeah.
So, obviously, they are beating their guy. Now, are they not beating their guy fast enough? Are they not finishing off, you know, getting to the quarterback fast enough?
Are they not beating him clean?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Just to say they're not beating their guy, I don't think is fair.
No. But when they are called upon and when they have needed to make sack and that play, they haven't done it.
No. Thank you so much for the phone call. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. We're running out of time, so I do want to get to these guys who are on hold. Peter from Massachusetts, you're next. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Paulie? How you doing, David?
Hi. Very well. How are you?
Good. Listen, man, it's tough out here in Massachusetts being a Giants fan right now, man.
On now. Just ask those Patriots fans how many rings Eli has.
Oh, you know, we got that. Absolutely. Hey, David Deal, how you feeling, brother?
I'm doing great, Peter. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Any chance that you might you feel physically able to go out there and play tackle for us this Sunday?
I'm not giving them up.
I'm good. At 251 this morning, I'm fantastic. I don't think I'm going out there and kick sliding anymore. I'm good with everything, but I appreciate it, Peter.
Well, we miss you and Chris Knee and those guys up front. Listen, real quick, I think it's time that maybe Eric Flowers sits down for a half, maybe bring in Will Beattie, maybe push out Justin Pugh out to tackle. Something's got to get there. He's very undisciplined. He's not catching the game. I don't know, it feels like he's just falling behind. Another thing, Victor Cruz, I've seen the last couple of weeks, I've watched the tape, and it seems like he's open. A lot of times, they're just not getting him the targets. Another thing, Eli really needs a big game this week, because he's been really bad these last couple of weeks. I feel like he's afraid of the cover two. I don't get it, because him and Gilbert used to kill the cover two about 4 years ago. It was like what they did. And do you think that Jerry Reese is allergic to drafting linebackers, or even does he have an issue with linebackers? We need help in the middle of the field here. I'll leave it up to you guys. I know you guys got a couple more calls to get to. Thank you for having me.
All right, Peter, that's a lot of stuff to touch on. I would only mention the linebacker thing real quick. They did draft B.J. Goodson this year in the middle rounds. They like him a lot, but to ask him to step in immediately is just too much. He's a developmental player.
Yes. Yeah, and I understand. Anytime that you have this and then you have to go to the next man up, it's always the would have, should have, could have. But coming into this season, this roster and the health of this football team was much different. So this is what happens in the NFL. There are going to be injuries. There are going to be replacements. And it's all based upon your depth and your team being able to overcome them as a team, not as just an offense, a defense, and a special teams, as a team cohesively, because you really need to lean on one another when – the offense isn't running the football, and they're not controlling the clock, and they come out in the opening drive and only take a minute 47 off after the Green Bay Packers just had almost a nine-minute drive,
yeah,
that hurts your defense.
That's a problem.
And it goes hand in hand.
Two more callers. We're going to be quick with you. I want to get one quick comment, though, from David first. It relates to the caller previously. I don't know how much of it is lip service or not, but offensive linemen often talk about chemistry,
yes,
and gelling and keeping it together. So when you're having some struggles like these guys are having, is changing the lineup truly the last resort because it can be counterproductive?
I mean, it's the last resort of what you want to do, but if something needs to be fixed, you need to fix it. Because if your offensive line is not doing the job, I don't care who you have as quarterback, if they don't have time to run and function in this offense or in any offense, you're not going to be successful. So as much as you think about that, the chemistry, the continuity of playing so many games, if something's broke, you need to fix it.
Okay, very good. Let's go back to the phones. I believe Matt from Long Island on line one is next. Hello.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Dave. How you doing?
Hi.
Hi, Matt.
All right. You know, I have a lot of things to say, but I know you're up against it, so I'm just going to throw one or two things quickly about the offense. The defense, first of all, kudos to them. I thought they were going to give up 40 the other night. They seemed to settle down and play a great game on defense, even though we didn't get the pass rush. Anyway, talking about the offense, called last week, I spoke to you, Paul, and I spoke to Howard, and I said that the offense had to get less vanilla. Now, they came out with the same offensive plan as normal. They did throw in the wrinkle of flipping it to Odell. All they got to do is let Odell know if you don't have it, throw it away.
Throw it away.
Like that, and it didn't work, and that's great, but at least we tried something. And
okay,
Swinging Odell out of the backfield, that picked us up some yards. We have to look for mismatches. They're doing the defense to us like we've never seen a deep cover two. And not, I know Charlie calls all the time, and I couldn't agree more with the man. I listened to him all year. We're missing an offensive lineman. Flowers should go to the other side, and we should get a left tackle because we can't run the ball. And with the defense they're playing against us right now, we should shove it down their throat, but we're not able to. And Eli's running for his life, maybe not getting sacked as much, but he's also getting rid of the ball so quickly. I think – I don't know what the trade deadline is. Maybe it's in a week. It's coming up soon. But I
think it's
this
week.
About Joe Thomas.
Joe Thomas, from my understanding, is that the Browns don't want to trade him. He's not on the block, and the rumors that you heard in the preseason have dissipated. That's not really a guy who's available.
No, that, I heard the same
thing. I thought I just saw something this week that says that they're thinking about it now that, you know, they're on their fourth.
I didn't see that, but I don't think that's the case.
You never know. I mean, they could turn, if they get a good deal, they could turn around and do it, and that is something that would definitely bolster the Giants' roster and the offensive line immediately because, you know, you talk about
he's a real good player.
Yeah, well, you talk about a suitcase, what we say, a suitcase draft pick, because that's a draft pick that you know that the minute that
Thank you,
arrives,
Matt, we got to run. Go ahead.
The minute that he arrives, he is going to be there for a long time, just like Joe Thomas has been in Cleveland.
Dre from Atlanta, you're going to be the final caller on the show. We have 2 minutes to go, so go ahead.
I'll make it real quick. What's going on, Dave?
Hey, Dre, Day.
Hey. You know what? That caller has a point in reference to, I mean, I think the no-holder offense is a blessing and a curse, but it seems like we have the same formation, the same 11 formation, the 12 formation. And what we need to do is either we run a stack or, you know, run a stack formation where it changes the route. Because it seems like some of these corners are already know where we're going, and they're already in position, especially when they drop back in the zone. So I think if we change up the routes or who runs what or who is in the slot, and mix it up.
Hold on a second now. It was only one play, but was Will Ty covered on that deep route? Was he covered?
Nope.
Did the Packers know what was coming?
Nope.
No.
No.
So was it a bad play call?
Because the seam route is always open when you run in two deep. I understand that. I'm talking about a reference to our three receivers, not our tight ends, because I think if Adams ran that route, he might have caught it because he's a little taller than Ty. I think he's 6'4", and Ty is 6'2". That made a difference. You know, unfortunately, height actually cures some passing mistakes from your quarterback.
I think offensively one of the things that they should do, which they started off, why I think Odell had the fast start that he did as a rookie year, because he lined up so many more spots to start off than he does now. When you're able to dictate the coverage based upon where you line him up, you're not only dictating the coverage passing, but you're dictating the coverage to run the football because of where they're aligning their safety. So that is what I would do. I'm not saying that they have to be reverses or anything, but there's got to be some type of deception where you're putting them in different spots and you're dictating the outcome of what they're going to do schematically on defense.
All right, Dre.
I agree. Thank you.
Thank you for the phone call. That'll do it for this week's edition of the show. David Deal.
Always an awesome time with my man, Paulie D. Here.
I will see this guy on MSG at 2 p.m. Eastern Time for Giants Press Conference Live. We'll have Coach Ben McAdoo. We will take you through a detailed preview of the Giants game on Sunday at home against the Baltimore Ravens. For now, that's the end of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll see you again tomorrow at 12 o'clock. Good day, everybody.